Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So how long do you want to live? 100, 200, even older? Gloria in Portland, Oregon wrote, "The global population is already too large to be sustainable. I would only support longer life in countries like Russia with birth rates lower than replacement. Who would want a Putin in power for another 50-plus years?" Esteban from Fort Worth, Texas wrote on our website, "I think it's awesome that we are talking about this. My only fear is that only the 1% will be able to afford the earliest stages of these efforts. Also, what will the religious sector think? That's just a can of worms." Well, after exploring this issue of life extension with genomic scientist J. Craig Venter, who has started an initiative to aggressively deploy gene science to anticipate and prevent the consequences of aging, we reached out to public health expert S.J. Olshansky, professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Olshansky says the concept of the normal human lifespan has been a moving target for centuries.
Look, if you go back a couple thousand years, you have to realize life expectancy was in the 20s and 30s. Early part of the 20th century, life expectancy was about 50 for women, 45 for men. And during the 20th century, it rose about 30 years, primarily as a result of advances in public health, clean water, sanitation, hand washing, refrigeration, and the like. And we're living much longer now because we reduced early age mortality. So we've created this unusual scenario, this trade-off of early age mortality that existed in the early part of the 20th century. And now we have old age mortality, primarily caused by heart disease, cancer, and stroke. So our world has changed fundamentally as a result of this shift in life expectancy. And, you know, we shouldn't actually be surprised that the diseases that we see have begun to appear at later age.
Has it ever been the case that life expectancy has slipped back in the course of the last few centuries?
Yes. Actually, throughout history, there have been a lot of vacillations in life expectancy, primarily brought forth by influenza pandemics of one kind or another. The biggest one in the 20th century was the 1918 influenza pandemic. It dropped life expectancy by a couple of years. Then we had a drop in 1957, 1968 due to influenza. And actually, recently, my colleagues and I just identified a drop in life expectancy among uneducated white men and women in the United States of about 5 years for women and 3 years for men. So, yeah, there have been historic examples of drops in life expectancy, absolutely.
Do you believe, as Craig Venter seems to believe, who we spoke with this week, that society has not prepared for the advent of people living well into their 80s and 90s, let alone the idea that there might be people of sizable numbers in the population living beyond 100.
Well, I heard Craig's interview, and his language, I think, was absolutely right on target. We are, in fact, not prepared for many of the changes that have occurred and many of the changes that are forthcoming. It's important to realize that the demographic shift that is going to happen, that is inevitable in the United States, in other developed countries, mean that we're going to see a very large increase very rapidly in the number of people over the age of 65, 85, even over 100. It doesn't mean life expectancy is going to go that high, but it means that the numbers are going to rise dramatically. And we're not prepared, I think, in many ways for the changes in society that are about to happen. And in particular, I think we're not prepared to handle the potential advantage of an aging population. There's a tendency to view aging only in a negative light, as if it's always associated with loss, decline, and decay. But scientists are now beginning to understand and realize the advantages of an aging population.
As a professor of public health, should we be looking at the human body at age 10, the human body at age, 20 or 30, and then the human body at age 60 and above, not maybe as different organisms, but as fundamentally different sort of physiological, entities that have a completely different disease profile, metabolic profile, life expectancy profile, moment to moment, year to year?
Actually, that's a really good question. So, of course, the human body changes with the passage of time. You know, those early life developmental events operate like clocks. In fact, they operate based on genetic clocks that influence growth, development, and reproduction. But what happens later in the lifespan is not driven directly by genes. It's not driven directly by evolution. It's pretty much an inadvertent byproduct of these early life developmental events. And that's important to realize. So yes, we do need to look at what's going on early and what's going on late as fundamentally different. But I would point out, by the way, that the research that has been published recently has suggested that there are subgroups of the older population, including those that are 85 and over, that are actually functionally, physically and mentally, no different than people decades younger than them. So we have to be real careful about how we consider age. In some instances, in many instances, it's just a number and nothing more than that. It should be completely ignored.
So how do we capture those positive aspects and put it into a strategy of social planning that's going to make sure that there are the resources available to deal with all the issues as the aging population grows?
Well, all right. So this is the right question to be asking. And I think this is where Craig Venter's new work in aging comes into play and the work of Calico from Google. And as it turns out, researchers have suggested, I mean, decades ago, that the time has arrived to take a fundamentally new approach to aging. You know, the way in which we've approached aging in the past and in the present is to apply the infectious disease model, which is to attack each disease as it arises. And we are now suggesting that we need to refocus our attention on the underlying biological risk factor for everything that goes wrong with us as we grow older, which is aging itself. Aging is malleable. It means that there's something we can do, there's something we can influence, and we should be taking the opportunity to do so.
And most of it involves sort of massive planning and a really, really aggressive approach to preventive health on all levels.
That's right. When we talk about aging science as an effort to slow aging or to extend the period of healthy life, we're talking about primary prevention with a capital P. If you want to go after heart disease, cancer, and stroke, it's certainly appropriate to do so at one level, the way in which it's being done now, one disease at a time. But we're suggesting that the best approach to take is the one to go after the underlying risk factor, which is aging itself. You have to realize when you push most of the population past the age of 65, 75, and 85, as we've done now, you don't really get much in the way of additional longevity by attacking one disease at a time. However, you get huge advantages in public health with minor changes in slowing aging.
Your parents still with us, Professor Olshansky?
My father lived to the age of 96. He actually was healthy up until 8 days before he died. And I think really most of us would like to sign up for something like that. My mother lived to the age of 90. She actually was reasonably healthy right up until the end. And I think really my personal focus is not on making it to 96. In fact, the last thing I would want would be to make it to 96 and have the last 15 years filled with frailty, disability, and Alzheimer's disease. It's not the number that's important. It's the health that's important. So I want to live as long as I can, as healthy as I can, whatever that number might be.
S.J. Olshansky, professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Extending human life. What are the practical and ethical implications of all that? Liz on Facebook says it's economics. Supporting yourself for 200 years and the impact on the environment with more and more people, we would burn out our number one resource, water. Tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE your view on all of this or leave a comment at facebook.com/thetakeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.